You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development creates uplifting environments that enrich the community life in Columbus, Ohio. Their team of passionate design, planning, and construction professionals are dedicated to seeing projects through from initial design concept to final completion. Build something together with 180 Property Development at 180propertydevelopment.com. Bart Logan with you. We've got Sam Fahmy. We've got Alex Stanek. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Not too bad. That stadium, though.
Yeah. It's a day.
I got up really early to go to that stadium thing.
Yeah.
It was worth it.
It was not bad. It's a day that, you know, people said that would never happen. They said, you know, there's nothing that we could do, that we're just a bunch of delusional people screaming online on Twitter.
Mile wide, inch deep.
That we're, you know, the people in power, they knew best to leave the decisions up to them, but we proved them wrong. And after what feels like months and weeks of speculation, will they, won't they, what are they waiting for, Nancy Pelosi finally announced that Congress is going to file impeachment hearings against Donald Trump. No, Wow. We're obviously talking about them stadium renderings. It is a beautiful day, gentlemen. There's a game. We'll talk about a game, I think, at some point. We'll do that in like the – so basically –
I don't know what game you're talking about.
I don't, because Sam wasn't able to see it. You were in Jordan, I believe.
I was in Jordan.
I have a couple of dear friends, wonderful people who are also very inconsiderate, and decided to schedule their wedding on the same day as the crew game. And I told them, it's like, it's not that hard. I did it a couple weeks ago to just avoid having a crew game there. All you need to do is become affiliated with an SB Nation affiliated podcast, ingratiate yourself with crew team management, and then, you know, you can do a little quid pro quo, and they'll schedule around your wedding in exchange for you just being a, like, soulless shill who just apologizes for the franchise the whole time. But they didn't do it.
I mean, they do it for the Quarter Horse Congress. I'm not sure why exactly. They wouldn't do it for regular Joes.
Yeah, seriously. So if this game analysis isn't satisfactory to you, if it doesn't provide, you know, the really hard-hitting and thoughtful commentary that you're used to, blame Mandy and Jordan. Find them and just blame them. Send them all your complaint emails. Don't bug the Massive Report. It's on them. But it sounded like, Alex, it was just kind of a replacement-level crew game for this season.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those weird games where the crew started really strong, and then the final third of the game, you got the feeling that, we're not playing so well. And then the final 10 minutes of that game, you got the feeling like, oh my God, it's just a matter of time before they blow this, and then they blew it. So you've seen that story before. Under Greg Berhalter and now under Caleb Porter, where they blow late leads and walk away with 1 point when they should have walked away with three. And that was another one of those games. I was actually more annoyed by the after-game stuff than I was the actual game stuff, because I no longer have any emotional investment in the season, and I've written it off, and the team is terrible, and that's fine. And I've already paid for my season tickets for next year, so I'm just looking forward to that. But after the game, there was this whole kerfuffle with Porter not doing a phone interview with the dispatch, and some people being like, oh, the dispatch sucks for not flying out their reporter to the game, and other people saying, why wouldn't Porter just take the stupid call? And I was definitely on the why didn't Porter just take the stupid call thing. I think he would have been more than happy to take that call if they would have won, but they didn't, so he didn't.
Yeah,
and it's kind of annoying.
At this point of the season, and now let's be clear, this is not the first time that this has happened. That's number one. Number two, at this point of the season, what else does he have to say that hasn't already been said?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand it's almost probably best that he doesn't make that call, or he doesn't take that call, because he could say something that could be construed one way or the other at this point. But you know what? Whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And I don't. It's been a while since the Dispatch. Dispatch doesn't hardly send anybody, no matter who it was.
Especially not across it's like, the country when the,
yeah,
the season's
it's some
over.
Some very, very important game, and yeah. or like there's
cross
some major
international borders too.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's
got to get a visa
yeah.
or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
not quite.
I mean, unless he's not an American citizen, which I believe yeah. Jacob is. But
I was just annoyed. I was, and you know, I'm to the point in the season where I'm kind of like, you know, we get it. Everything sucks. It's fine. We still got your back, Caleb. We still got your back, kinda. But you know, at least, you know, say we'll do better next time to our local reporters who, by the way, helped save this team literally barely a year ago. So, you know, just be nice. Be nice.
I agree with that, but also I do think you've gotten better quotes from Caleb, just like, you know, more revelatory, let alone just more interesting in, you know, whatever, 8 months of Caleb Porter than we got in 4 years of Greg Berhalter.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
He did that by design. And so because I'm sort of with you, Sam. It's like if it's the same quote that I'm always reading every time, I don't disagree. I do think ultimately you're a professional, Caleb. You're supposed to just answer that phone call, even if you are just giving them the same quote that you gave. He's just a dude doing his job, and Jacob's a good person. But it's not – I don't
but
know.
But in the great scheme of things, the scenario of the games has repeated over and
exactly.
over throughout the year. I'm not – at this point, if he didn't have an answer for it, you know, 10 games ago, I'm not sure he'd have an answer for it now. And even though I am a member of the media, at some point, beating the dead mm-hmm. horse is just sad, you know. So just let it go. The season's over.
Yeah.
It's not – just let it go.
And we can, because we've got something to look forward to, and it's not the MLS Cup playoffs.
That's
but
what I'm talking about.
It's a lot better. Oh, my God, that new Red and Rings, boys. What do we think? But just what the initial thoughts? Obviously, there are some rumblings. And Alex, you're, you know, one of our inside sources, I guess, both of you. Sam, you're also
yeah.
in the media. You guys kind of knew that this was coming. And I started seeing things on Twitter, you know, Pete Edwards showing up. I'm sorry, owner, Dr. Pete Edwards showing up at Endeavor in scrubs, you know, last night. And it sounded like something big was happening, and then something big did.
Yeah, I had seen a couple versions of the renderings over the last year or so. And so I had not seen anything since Garber made the comments of it looks like something from Star Wars. And so I was wondering if they had thrown out their last design and just started completely fresh and had some sort of crazy looking something or other. This was pretty close to what I saw this summer, early summer. And I liked it then. I love it now. I think that they have a really good plan for something that is not just going to be a good stadium on match days, but is something that's going to be a good community asset year-round on match days and non-match days. I really like some of the things that they've incorporated beyond the design. And then the design is excellent. You know, this is a wish list of every stupid thing Crew fans ever wanted. Oh, safe standing? Yeah, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Something to hang TIFO from like the upper deck? Yeah, got it.
Roof.
A roof that goes all the way around? Got it.
And all the way to the edge of the field.
Lots of parking ways in and out, so you're not dealing with a state fair parking situation and you can go home in a timely manner?
Mm-hmm.
Got it. They thought of everything, it seems like. And you know, unless there's some sort of weird oversight where they didn't put bathrooms in or something like that, I think it's going to be phenomenal. I can't wait. I've already got my, you know, priority place as a season ticket holder. If you have not already done that, get to it. Get buying those 2020
mm-hmm.
season tickets. You
do
can
it,
get the
do it.
2021 priority seating in the brand new Crew Stadium. It's going to be incredible.
And also witness the last season in historic
yeah.
Mafre Stadium, Columbus Crew Stadium,
yeah.
the first soccer-specific stadium in the United States.
Yeah, the final season. It's so weird to say in the house that Lamar built,
mm-hmm.
the home of Dos Acero. It is going to be, you know, a sad moment when that stadium, you know, moves on. But at the same time, it's still going to be here as
mm-hmm.
a community asset for years and decades to come. And so, you know, they did it the right way. They've done this whole process the right way. They reached out to fans and were like, hey, what do you think? You know, if you bumped into a front office person and they liked you well enough, they might have shown you and been like, hey, what do you think? You know, people are very, very open in this front office, and people are very, very open in this community. and we're all pulling in the same direction. And this is just it's incredible. It really is incredible.
Yeah, I just sitting through the explanation of the renderings and then seeing it more instead of like a basic, you know, sketch type of look that we saw a while ago. Seeing it more up close and personal and significantly more detail, really, really kind of like upped that level of excitement and how passionate they were in explaining what the certain aspects of the stadium will look like is pretty cool. But the couple of things that really stood out to me is just some of the detail that they put into the materials that they're going to be using.
Yeah.
And how that canopy is going to look over the stadium and all the way to the edge of the field. Every seat will be completely covered.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you have wind and stuff like that will blow things around, but whatever.
But think of just how loud that place is going to be with
it's
that.
It's going to be so loud.
Oh, my God.
And the whole, like, I think somebody said, why do they have boxes above the Nordic? And it's like, no, those are not boxes. That's the beer garden, which is open.
Think of how loud that is going to be.
Yes. I mean, the Nordic will have its own beer lines in that matter. What I really thought was cool were two things, and those were mentioned in today's meeting. One is the fact that the pitch is actually below street level. So when you walk up those steps and go into the stadium, you're actually at the top of the lower bowl of seats.
It's kind of like Michigan down in college football.
Let's not talk about
Michigan. Yeah, I know. They suck. But it's fun. Let's bring them up.
Sure. But I think that's very, very reminiscent of a lot of European stadiums. Mm-hmm. So that when you walk in, you get that full view. You're not having to go upstairs and stuff like that. But the other thing, too, is that they mentioned that the gates are mobile. They're a game day only situation. And so those mag gates will only come out during games, and then they will be hidden for an otherwise unobstructed access to that plaza. So that's going to be really, really neat. Even how like the plants that they're going to be using and some of the things that they're thinking about for the exteriors, they're still talking about signage. The lighting that they're going to be using, which they actually mentioned in today's meeting, is going to look really neat once it's up. From a photographer's standpoint, it's going to be pretty solid.
It sounds really cool, and I'm really excited. And since you brought up Michigan, I'd just like to say that, you know, if FC Cincinnati is looking for yet another coach, they could always go with Jim Harbaugh since he's used to losing big games. No, but in all seriousness, I really, really like the design. The thing that really stood out to me is as something that, you know, Crew fans have kind of thrown around as a dream request. I remember people were asking Precourt about this years ago, and he was always like, oh, yeah, we'll think about it. It was the idea of a supporters bar that would be open all the time. And we had talked about this. I mean, we all kind of break off and do random things around Columbus for game days that are not in Columbus. Now you can just go to the stadium, whether it's home or away, and watch the game at Crew Stadium.
Yep.
And you can watch the game that's in L.A. at Crew Stadium. And who cares? No matter where it is, you can watch the Crew Stadium. I cannot wait for that. Away, I'm actually potentially more excited about the away game at the beer garden than I am at the actual game at
the stadium. Well, not only that, you now have an event space you have a plaza that is set up for concerts and shows, and according to today, that plaza can fit up to 2,000 people. So imagine those World Cup watch sessions that were in the tent where it's 20,000 degrees. Yeah. Now you're sitting outside next to the river watching on a big screen, just kind of like we did at Columbus Commons for the Women's World Cup, you know. So to have that kind of thing. Also, speaking of that area, there is a bridge that's being built from Grandview that'll connect the area so that people can bike.
Yeah, if you bike down
bike
or
path.
Anything, yeah.
A pedestrian bridge.
Yeah.
This is yet another thing that has been requested many times.
Well, pedestrian bridge over the railroad tracks.
Everyone is like, oh, yeah, we'll definitely look into that. And then they failed to deliver. And so, once again, in your face, Precourt, you couldn't do it. We're doing it. I just love it. I love it. They should really, you know, there's no way that they could rub this more in Precourt's face at this point. I love it. I can't wait for the groundbreaking when there's going to be like more than six people there and they're going to not have to set off like three smoke bombs behind to cover the fact that there's like toxic waste dump behind there. God, I love so much. Everything about this. It's so nice. Screw you, Austin. We've got our stadium. We saved the Crew.
One of the other, you know, features that I think is easy to maybe to overlook, but it also has a 100,000 square foot field compliant with MLS, CONCACAF, and FIFA regulations. Hey, New York City FC. Novel idea, right? Crazy concept.
It's funny that you bring up New York City FC because Jason Davis posted a tweet about just asking for people's reactions. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. There was like probably about 10 or 15 reactions from NYCFC fans absolutely pissed about how NYCFC can't get anything going for that. But Columbus Crew is going to have this insane stadium. And I was really kind of interested because of the number of people, the supporters from other teams that are like, oh shit, we're going to have to plan a trip to the stadium now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So I think that's really neat. It, as much as Mafre has its own history and stuff like that, as much as I think this new stadium is really going to open a lot of things that we didn't have before. And like you said, it's the wish list for every Crew fan, down to, I don't know, what else would be on that wish list? Parking and tailgates?
Radamo Falcao.
A tunnel from Betty's. A tunnel from Betty's. For our friend Brian Phillips, who can't be here tonight. But
we don't need Betty's anymore now that we've got the beer garden.
You take that back. Betty's is a locally owned small business, and we support
that. What are they calling? What was the name of the beer place there? It was Crew something, right? It was some Crew House.
Which is good.
Crew House, yeah. Are you freaking kidding me with this? This is so good.
And you know what? I'm going to bet that by the time, at least the way Steve Lenz was kind of talking today about how things were going. And if you haven't watched any of those, they are on our Facebook page.
Cool.
I think by the time that stadium opens, it has naming rights and it has...
Oh, of course, yeah.
And each one of those things, like, did you notice the subtle thing that said Sponsorgate?
I didn't know.
Yeah, so like if you look at one of the renderings, it says Sponsorgate B or Sponsor.
That's
like,
cool.
I can bet you that I wouldn't be surprised if each gate will have a sponsor.
That'd be super
cool.
Like,
well, they're talking about kind of the unique identities for each corner and everything.
Yeah,
how
maintaining that dark and light contrast in like to kind of match up with the team's colors. So yeah, they're supposed to come back with signage. I saw in one of the renderings the smokestack that is from the Columbus, whatever it is, Columbus Light something.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's one of the renderings has the word Columbus in lights that smokestack, and it looks sick.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm looking at it now.
Yeah, that thing is
aerial view.
Yeah, that thing is gonna look sick. Mm-hmm. So once a lot of that stuff and the signage and its location starts going up, that, you know, it's going to be that whole stretch of West Nationwide is going to be absolutely insane.
So this will be our second soccer specific stadium before the New England Revolution get their first. Should we try to donate Mafre to them on some point? Just like mail it to the Kraft family. Mail the Ohio State parking lot to Austin so that they don't have to walk 20 minutes to get to their stadium when that thing opens. And,
but where's the fun in that?
It's just, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame. You feel so bad for them. What a shame.
Oh, that's awful.
Sorry, Revs. Sorry, I mean, Austin.
I think that is, you know, one of the big shortcomings of this stadium is there doesn't appear to be any water taxi access.
Yeah.
Seriously, guys, you're really taking you've got this huge resource in front of you, the Scioto River, that all these people could be trying to.
I thought they were
going to
have like
from.
Canoe parking.
Austin. That's how they're going to get half the people there. Whom amongst us they're doesn't ride a nice water taxi to their soccer match?
There's a distinct lack of toxic soil as well that I you know, just really feel like I should go out there on one of my days off and just like dump a bunch of mercury in the
Cool because it glows bright green to match with the team colors, okay? That's why they chose it. It was by design.
It glows bright verde. Yeah.
Instead of growing the legend, they're going to mutate the legend.
That's right. And by legend, they mean cancer. So, no, in all seriousness, though, I think it's a really good setup that they're building, not just for the present, but for the future. I think this is a site that's going to host the Crew for decades and decades to come. I think this is going to complete what Nationwide had always been thought of as being this, you know, kind of sports and hangout spot for the city. Yeah. It was that way before with the Nationwide Arena and with Huntington Park, but adding this Crew Stadium is really going to make this a year-round destination for people in this city. And I think for people around the country, this is going to be one of those destination spots. It's going to be a bucket list stadium for fans of American soccer. I can't imagine that U.S. soccer is not going to want to host major qualifiers here again. So we'll see how it goes. But I would not be surprised if Dos Aceros comes back here eventually. And if it goes anywhere like it went the first couple times it was here, maybe they'll keep it. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But it's everything positive that you could ever want. No wishes that were not fulfilled by this plan.
I think there's, you know, one, because you sort of brought it up there, and there are sort of the questions about, you know, capacity and stuff. Yeah. And obviously this looks like, you know, it's 20,000. Is that enough? I know, you know, there are a lot of people that would look at and say, hey, you know, you're moving into a new stadium. I think they're going to fill that one up pretty quickly, immediately. They'll sell that out, you know, most games for the first few years. Do you think, you know, they should have looked or had that option? There are always rumors that you hear about Huntington Park where they could actually add more seats on if they wanted to. Do you think that 20,000 number or so was the right number? And even if it means that, you know, this is a venue that won't be able to host, you know, a World Cup game when the U.S. won, we've got it, what, 2026
I think,
or anything?
Yeah, I thought that the minimum for, like, World Cup games is 20,000 for qualifiers.
I think
for
it's qualifiers. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't doubt that. And oddly enough, I asked Steve Lyons about this afterwards. Mm-hmm. I said, have you guys shown, obviously Don Garber has seen it, have you guys shown this to U.S. soccer to talk about, like, the future of national team games?
Yeah.
He said, no, he said, we obviously showed it to our players. We showed it to MLS. We showed it to Don Garber, and they all have loved it. But we haven't reached out to U.S. soccer yet.
And there's no way that any of those players had any communications with U.S. soccer or Greg Berhalter, their former coach.
But I can see this becoming a, you know, it might start out with, like, some of the smaller qualifiers, mm-hmm. like maybe a Honduras or a Jamaica or something like that. And once they see how it responds to the fans and how the fans respond to it, that might lead to other games. I wouldn't be surprised if we see, like, you know, a couple of women's national team games first mm-hmm. in there within a short span of time before we see, like, a full, you know, has the men's national team played at Audi Field yet?
I want to say they did. I can't remember.
I don't know.
I thought they played a friendly there.
They might have, but not a qualifier. Not a big game.
Mm-hmm.
And 20,000 tickets for U.S. soccer, that kind of gives them that opportunity to maintain this whole, you know,
charge $80 for the last row,
exactly.
Top row. Yeah,
they're playing Cuba in October at Audi Field
for a qualifier or just a friendly.
I think it's a friendly.
But I mean, that supply and demand thing that kind of plays in their favor in a 20,000 seat stadium, that they can get packed to the gills and maybe add another, like, two or three standing room only.
Mm-hmm. It's a CONCACAF Nations League game.
Oh, yeah,
that new tournament thing that they're starting. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how it all pans out. It's obviously not the right size for a World Cup game itself.
Not for an actual World Cup game.
Those are always going to be in NFL stadiums because you can sell more $200 tickets that way. But I think that this has the potential to really be one of the crown jewels, not just of Ohio sports, but of the soccer nation, really.
Yeah.
This is one of the nicest stadiums in the country.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a practice facility for teams that would be playing, because I think Cleveland was one of the World Cup sites, right?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if it's a practice facility for teams that are playing in Cleveland in during the World Cup.
Yeah, it could be a home base for some, especially if you're close to Cleveland. You're close. Doesn't Chicago get some games too?
I think Chicago does.
So you would be, if you're in this region, it could be a nice home base in the middle there for you.
I'd rather practice there than in Bridgefield if you're playing in Chicago.
Yeah, it's
Bridgeview. See, the guy. That's how long I just forgot.
Yeah.
although they're going to be in Chicago, hopefully, by the downtown Chicago by the time that happens. So,
But Bridgeview's still going to be stuck with the soccer-specific stadium. More than
And they're
going to
play
at
Soldier Field, which is...
That's true. That's true.
I don't think they're going to get a stadium by 2026.
No, probably not. So, I don't know. I think that this is as good of a step forward as you could possibly have. I think that... You know, the next step is going to be how long does it take us to kind of get our support so that we're selling this place out every week. And I think that's a multi-year process, even with this site. I think it's going to be take some time to kind of rebuild everything that we lost. But I'm optimistic that that's going to happen, that we're going to get to the point where we are selling this thing out. And it's going to be an atmosphere like nobody's ever seen before. I mean, you think Nordeck is loud now. Wait until the sound is reverberating off of the roof of that thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be shaking. Well, and that, I think that's going to
wall of sound behind the goal is going to be pretty legit.
Yeah. So one thing we should also talk about is how steep Nordeck is. It looks it looks like the yellow wall in Dortmund.
Dortmund, yep.
I mean, I think that's what they went after. It's safe standing. You're going to have voices up and down that thing. And it's going to be an intimidating place to play. We're all going to be right on top of them. And
if you're not a fan of standing the entire game, the Nordeck is not the place for you.
But also, it's bigger. Explain it's what bigger safe standing is, though, for those that aren't familiar with it.
So safe standing is basically it's a narrow area with a rail in front so that you can't. The reason it was created was in England, they used to have something called terraces, which were basically just flat bleachers with nothing separating them, almost like very long steps that were not super high. And so you would just stand on your step, and then you could just stand there for the whole game. What would happen, unfortunately, and this happened in a number of instances, is you could push down onto the steps in front of you when there was a goal scored or something like that.
And you get a domino effect.
And the people in the very front would be crushed. And there were a number of injuries, and in a couple of circumstances, a lot of people died. And so they banned terraces from all stadiums in England. But people still wanted that same experience where you're standing shoulder to shoulder with everybody else. The people in front of you are there. And so what they did was they developed this system called safe standing where you have these rails that prevent you from pushing down to the row in front of you.
Do they have cup holders?
You have a seat behind you that you can flip down so you can sit in the safe standing section. You're not going to have to stand all game. You're not going to have to stand at halftime. I don't know if there are cup holders in the seats or not, to be honest with you.
That's something they should
consider. I don't even know if they'd be in the seats. They might be on
the
rail.
No, on the rail. That's what it'd be.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what that looks like.
Just a little plug for you guys here. If anyone's listening, that would be a good feature to add.
I would imagine that they're going to do something like that. But in general, it's just you are standing for most of the game, and you can't crush anybody by running down. So it's a really, really good setup. It's what a lot of countries are doing now.
Mm-hmm.
England has not adopted it. They have a lot of people who are very scared still, and rightly so. If you look at the Hillsborough accident and situations like that where, you know, a lot of people died, they have not adopted this at all. But if you go to Germany, safe standing is the standard there. A lot of the new stadiums that are being built and designed in places like Italy utilize safe standing. It's kind of the future of the sport, and so we're kind of on the cutting edge with this. There are a couple other stadiums in the country that have that. I think
Orlando City does.
LAFC, I know, does. I think Orlando does, and I think Audi Field does. But I know that the new LAFC stadium, that was one of the big things that they touted was, hey, we've got safe standing for the whole supporter section. We're really going to help lead the way on this, and it's going to be great. Nordeck is going to be even louder. I'm curious to see where the drums are going to go. This is kind of like a random thing for people who live in Nordeca. Drum placement is actually really important.
Yes.
And so where the drums are going to go, is there a flat space in the middle for the drums? I hope that's something that they've thought about. I'm sure that they've talked to the drum team about this, and I know that they've talked to the Capos, and the Capos were involved in kind of the design process related to this, so I know that that part's taken care of, but... You know, it's going to be a great spot, and I can't wait to get there. I'm taking the day off work on the 10th. I'm going to be down there at like 6 a.m. and I'm going to spend the whole day at the site.
Are you
going to
grab some of the dirt from the ground and save it in a bottle?
I don't know about
your kids and grandkids.
I don't know about that because I mean, I'm hoping I'll be able to take them there. You know,
yeah.
So I don't know if I'll
you
need
will.
This.
That's the beauty.
But I want to get in line.
This is the dirt before the dirt hit the fan.
I want to get in line, and I want to get my shovel full. I want to put a shovel in the ground if I can. In this whole thing, I don't know if they're going to let people do that. I was going to say that would be interesting to see.
BYOC, bring your own shovel.
First 500 people get a commemorative mini shovel.
Ooh,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, so I mean, there's that.
I'm going to take my commemorative mini shovel and I'm going to shove it in the ground and do a little mini shovel scoop full of it, and I'm going to go home.
Let me know. I'll make sure I get a picture of that.
Okay, you do that.
Yep,
we'll do that.
One of the other things with the Nordic. 3,400 seats, I believe, making it one of, if not the largest supporter sections in MLS, right?
Yeah. So I want to say that Nordeca currently holds 25. That might be a little bit high. I thought it was around 2,500. I'm going to get yelled at by somebody who's Nordeca leadership for not knowing that number. Or they're going to be like, it's 18. But I was thinking it was around there. It's definitely larger than what Nordeca is now. I think that we can easily do that. I think that that's going to be a cakewalk. I think the challenge is going to be filling out the south end, filling out kind of the upper deck portions of the stadium, the sides, and also then what do the ticket prices look like? Mm-hmm. I don't think there's been a whole lot of information on that yet. There was a survey that came out. I don't even remember how long ago it was that threw all kinds of numbers at you, said, would you rather buy South End tickets for $600 or would you rather buy Nordeca tickets for $150? Well, I think I'll go with the Nordeca tickets. Thank you very much. Or would you rather pay $1,000 for Nordeca tickets or $1,500 for South End? Oh, I think I'll do Nordeca at that price.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of bounced these either-or scenarios at you, and some of the prices were very low, some were pretty high. That will be an interesting thing to kind of watch for as well. But I think they know their market. I think they're going to try to get people in there early, you know, show them the experience, and then you can raise prices year on year.
Well,
you know, you can just kind of ratchet it up a little bit, but it'll be great.
And since you brought up the whole, like, getting people in early, there was the email that went out today, and actually the crew posted it about if you want to get on the waiting list for seats in the new stadium. Once all the season ticket members have renewed and stuff like that, you can pay a deposit of $50 and just be on that waiting list and get to choose your seat once you know the all the regular renewals have taken place. So I think that's going to be interesting to see how that turns out and how many people kind of take that route as opposed to actually straight up buying season tickets. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people see that the season ticket prices are significantly higher than what they are now, then they might not. But at least they kind of kept a spot in line, because if we're looking at, they're almost at 10,000 seats right now, 10,000 season ticket holders. If you're going to consider that number might increase, not just because more people are wanting to come to the stadium, but also because you're selling more corporate seats.
We haven't even touched about that. That's going to be the big new hotness.
Yeah,
for
so
MLS.
you're going to have a situation here where I'm not going to say you're going to end up with a waiting list, but you might, and that I mean that's not a bad thing to have.
Well, especially if they go about it the Austin way, where you say, hey, one deposit entitles you to what, 8 tickets. So hey, if you just have those 10,000 season ticket holders, congratulations, we sold 80,000 tickets we're sold out for the next four years
for a 20,000 seat stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
But math.
I mean, is there anything, what other big questions, you know, if any, do you guys have, you know, looking at this? Obviously groundbreaking starts October 10th, or that's, you know, when it officially begins. But, you know, is this, that still seems to me I don't know, like a kind of fast timeline to get that's a little bit, you know, what, about 18 months basically to be ready for the 2021 season. And I just, are we going to be looking at something like, you know, DC, where you're playing half all your games on the road in the first half of the season so they can open, or will it be ready for opening day 2021?
If by the road you mean a stadium that's, what, 5 miles north of where your new stadium
is
going
to be?
Oh, I'm
not against it.
You know, and I think that's really, that's where it plays in the Crew's favor, is that you don't have to play on the road because your stadium is not ready. You have a fully capable stadium of hosting your games until your new stadium is ready.
But when we talked to Tim Bezpachenko earlier this season, he did mention the possibility of having kind of an extended road stretch in the beginning of the season and then switching over. So we might only have one or two games until May or something like that. We can still host those games.
I wouldn't mind that. I'm kind of tired of having 8 games in March.
Yeah.
So they're going to shoot. They're still shooting. They're still summer, confident in that July 2021 date. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Red, White, and Crew is opening of the new stadium, you know.
That would be so cool.
It's a good time to have some fireworks blown.
Oh,
up,
man.
You know? Oh, that would
I just
be
cannot,
glorious.
I cannot wait. Like, seeing it, oh, man. I can't wait for them to start digging and, you know, start. I'm sure they're going to put up a webcam or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I can just check it every day and be like, ah, oh, there goes the south end. Oh, look at that. Oh, there goes the north end. It's going to be so nice. And I think this is the point at which, you know, I know for me, you know, we saved the Crew, and we all knew that we saved the Crew. But when you invest this kind of money in a stadium, you're sending a very strong signal that, hey, we're not going anywhere this year. We're not going anywhere this decade. We are putting hundreds of millions of dollars into a building that is literally permanent. It's not going to be able to be moved to another city. Neither is this team. The Crew are here to stay.
And speaking of money wise, you know, they had originally said $230 million. Today they were saying it might be a little bit north of that. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the types of things that they're trying to do with this place, the whole perforated metal thing, that's going to be pretty cool. And it's supposed to have some sort of like reflective material on it. I'm interested in seeing how that looks. I did actually chuckle at one of the renderings because it showed like the streets were wet, and I'm like, wow, that's very Columbus of you.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
The streets are wet because it's been raining or something.
But so that does bring up a point because, you know, there was even talk back when Cruz Stadium and Mafre was originally, you know, in design that, hey, there's going to be a roof on that and we obviously that's not what came to be. Lamar Hunt had to basically, you know, pay for it all privately out of pocket to make it all happen. So do you, you know, when you say that, hey, look, it might have been quoted a little bit higher. We do know that, look, you know, even if the Crew's going to have to sell this to the public, probably, I mean, to an extent, I think it's already mostly been voted on. But if it's going to be going over, and if they're going to be asking the public for additional dollars, do you think that they're going to keep that, or do you think that, you know, some of this might be idealistic, but we're going to meet? It's going to be a little bit not quite as shiny as this. Maybe the, you know, the 1.0 versus the 2.0 or 1.2 versus 2.0 model.
I think that they're at this point they're fairly confident with where they're at. From a materials and you know, design standpoint, obviously there might be some changes, but you know, you have stuff that is not really in their control, and that's called politics and tariffs, and the prices of these materials adjust on a daily basis, and that's why people trade in their stocks. But you know, you have a situation where at this point they're hopefully as close to where they think it is as possible, and then they're going to continue to go on from there. So hopefully it's not too much more than, you know, I would venture to guess it can probably have, say, in the 250, 260 range with a margin of difference in price of at least 7 to 10%.
Mm-hmm. But and you do look at, you know, at least the revenue that this you know, this team is going to be able to capture that they weren't really able to, as you know alluded to earlier, the big suites, sponsorship deals for all those. I mean, the difference between, you know, I love Moffrey.
There's a lot more pieces to sell names
on.
Oh
yeah, well, and being at you know, on the fairgrounds. Versus being right there downtown the arena district in a lot of cases when municipalities are sold on publicly financing to whatever degree a stadium and you know, support for a sports team, they're sold and said this is going to be this huge economic boon, it's going to attract so much. The arena district is really the shining example where that sales job actually is the case, and where there was nothing going on, a black hole more or less, the former site of the Ohio Penitentiary, and they put Nationwide Arena in there, and to the point though, you know, it's fair to caveat that wasn't privately financed.
Yeah.
But look at everything that has grown around that and continued to grow that and was able to attract the Columbus Clippers, the Franklin County, who owns them, to purchase that land and build in there. And you've seen so much investment in how that has grown and spread and spurred growth. I mean, I would argue, and I think there are probably local economists that would argue, that has really been one of the impetuses for the revitalization of the short north.
Yeah.
And
it
so this
hurt
is one
at
of,
all.
Exactly.
And it doesn't hurt at all that you know, Clippers Park, because it was done right, or Huntington Field, I mean, because it was done right, it has been repeatedly named one of the best ballparks in the U.S. And I think that's going to be one of the same situation with this stadium. But also look at how many things, kind of like you said, how many things have sprouted and how much development has taken place since Nationwide Arena and Huntington Park were built, and how much more space is available for more businesses to grow, like restaurants and bars and things like that, that could be catalyzed by the existence of something at the end of that street. Because really, that street is going to end with that stadium.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's nothing else beyond that. And then any of the other stuff that they're going to build around it, which they didn't really talk about much in this meeting, but there's a big grass area next to the stadium that has nothing going in it yet.
That'll be the Confluence Village area, I believe.
I'm assuming that would be the case. I saw a couple of other like parking areas that were close to the stadium that I don't remember seeing before, but I don't know if that's, you know, wishful thinking or what it was. But yeah, it's definitely going to even move more of that motion in downtown. Imagine if you have like a day-night doubleheader of like Clippers and Crew, or Crew and Blue Jackets.
Oh man, I'd love to have like a Patriots Day thing, like they've got in Boston, when you've got, you know, usually the Bruins are in the playoffs. The Red Sox have like a day game, Bruins game at the night, and then I think they do the run too in Boston.
Yeah.
What if you had all three of those? That would be awesome.
Yeah. So I mean, your obviously biggest headache is going to be parking at that point, but. You know, you if you set it up correctly, you set it up with CODA to where, like, you can do a park and ride.
Oh, yeah.
From other...
You can take the three
garages.
Just from CODA right there that
you
drops
know,
you off
and,
right on Nationwide Boulevard.
And arrange it to where, like, you can do, like, oh, this is a triple header day where you take in a Crew game, a Blue Jackets game, and a Clippers game. That would be a long, long day of sports.
They should... Just as a general rule, I think it would be interesting to have CODA give free rides on match days if you show a ticket.
I think that would be cool.
Yeah. So if you got a Crew ticket, you show it to them, you can take any of the CODA lines that go towards the stadium or away from it. Just make that be a pass for the day. Screw it. Because I would love to park, you know, up here by Hendox or something like that, take a bus down. And then come back here after the game and have a beer. And then
But you're going to have a Crew beer hall. That was the other thing that I was thinking of, like the idea of the beer hall there. It's like, well, then I don't have to, you know, as much as we love 4th Street, don't have to maybe trek all the way up there to go, or go into the parking lot,
and,
usually
and
the case.
All of that. And we haven't really talked about, like, marches.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about any of that stuff, and now you don't have to go over the railroad tracks because there's a nice tunnel underneath.
Mm-hmm. yep.
And, you know, the noise levels in that on that march and smoke or whatever that's... I mean, it's a nicely paved, brick-paved road that's going to be really cool coming down, and you're heading west into the sun, you know, that on an afternoon game or an evening game. It's going to be cool. I know that, like, one of the biggest complaints that I've seen has been about, oh, I'm going to miss the tailgating. It's like... Have you ever watched Ohio State fans tailgate in the garages?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can do that.
Tailgating sucks.
That's a bad contrarian take.
Go ahead, Bart, and then I'm gonna rant about why tailgating sucks.
What I will just say is that, like, anyone who has gone to a Blue Jackets game or gone to a Clippers game has parked above ground, and the parking lots that are all available there. On Nationwide Boulevard, between Nationwide Boulevard and Spring, there are a bunch of them, and
from High to Spring.
It's not going to be that difficult for Nordeca, you know, even with Nordeca as divided as we can be at times, to go and talk to somebody and say, hey. And especially maybe if they partner a bit with a, you know, crew Betty's. Front office and say, hey, what do we just need to pay to have, like, exclusive access to this lot for 17 days every year? That one's fenced off and we set up in there, and then you can sell the rest of those for parking, and then they set that up. And to the point, you know, for everybody that complains about parking, again, you've been to Blue Jackets games. You've been to Clippers games. You know what it's going to be. It's not like there are more. And even though that Patriots Day kind of scenario that we're talking about, that would be fun and it could present maybe issues, the vast majority, we're talking about 17 days a year when there are going to be crew games there. I think they can, and you've got a front office that is smart, that is adept, that knows how to work with other people and recognizes and is familiar with this market, and they're going to be working with the Ohio States, working with the Blue Jackets front office, working with the Columbus Clippers to do what they can to make sure that they mitigate those conflicts as opposed to, you know, trying to go up against them because, what the hell, I'm trying to tank the team and get a reason to leave.
So my big beef with tailgating is I feel like tailgating is a last resort social activity for sports fans who want to hang out with their friends before a sporting event of some kind, but have nowhere else to do it. Like, I feel like when you tailgate at the Buckeyes with your friends in the parking lot, it's because if you tried to go to the varsity club or someplace like that, you'd be shoulder to shoulder with everybody and you wouldn't be able to talk. Mm-hmm. Whereas if there were restaurants and things like that, you could just go to those restaurants or you could go to those bars. I think that there will be enough places around Nationwide Boulevard area that people can kind of disperse with their friends as they see fit, find a cool place to hang out, and then know that, hey, we're meeting up at X spot at X time so that we can all march into the stadium and then to do that. So I think that's going to be the real benefit. I mean, if you want to go to the crew house, you can go there. If you want to go to Betty's, you can go there. If you want to go down the street and go to our bar, have at it. You know, you can go wherever the heck you want. Having that kind of ability to do stuff instead of the crew parking lot, which your choices are, you can hang out in the crew parking lot, you can hang out in the Lowe's parking lot, or you can hang out in the Frisch's Big Boy parking lot, even though Frisch's is no longer there, so now it's just a vacant lot. Or you could go to Aldi with your friends. Tailgating at that point becomes the best option. I think there will be better options at the new crew stadium, and I like the ability for people to just do whatever. If you still want to tailgate, that's cool too.
Exactly. I don't think it's an either or proposition. Yeah. I think it's going to be yes and. You can tailgate and there will still be opportunities to tailgate. Those of us that enjoy tailgating, and because it is a little bit more inexpensive in some of those cases, you're still going to be able to do it. And if you want to go catch a, you know, have a beer at Boston's or Betty's, go to Betty's. It'll be cheaper and it's wonderful. Regardless, you'll be able to, and that's what's gonna be so great and awesome about this, and it's gonna be more accessible. And I think the only other complaint I've seen, and probably just like the lowest on the totem pole, would be that, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to be that, you know, that same matching brick that matches the aesthetic of the rest of the arena district. So in that case, let's just screw it. Let's not do it.
Let's go down to Austin. That's not actually true.
Ooh, tell me more.
There is going to be brick like that's very similar to Huntington Park and Nationwide Arena. It's just not going to be as much.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about the concrete stamping that's going to be in the like where the concert area is and the plaza. And there was some suggestion from one of the members of the commission that, you know, instead of just straight squares or rectangles or whatever, that they do something creative with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually, at least from the guys that were explaining the stadium, it seemed like it was an accepted topic. So you never know. They might do some stuff with it. I think the stadium itself does not lend itself to brick. Mm-hmm. But I think the plaza might, and they're really taking a lot of elements from other stuff that is in the arena district, but it will look different. It will not look like Nationwide Arena. It will not look like that vintage ballpark feel of Huntington Park. This is going to feel like an edgy spaceship, and a cool edgy spaceship it will be.
So I think that we could also just repave all of the brick roads in that arena district with high-tech perforated metal. That's another option. You know, just instead of making the stadium look like the roads, we can just make the roads look like the stadium, you know, just flip it on.
It's going to be cool, like, when you walk down, you know, because it's a little bit back. It's going to be, like, a little not directly onto the street, but it's once you get past under the railroad bridge, and you're going to be able to see it right there on the right, and it's going to look pretty neat.
It is going to be glorious, and that we're going to have some more time to continue talking and gushing about this, especially, you know, throughout as we're watching it be constructed. But yeah, we do have some games still left, including one coming up this weekend, the home finale, that we'll have to preview after this break here on the Massive Report podcast. And we're back with the Massive Report. This segment brought to you by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Follow GCG Bag on Twitter and Facebook at GCGBag96 for all the dankest memes. And you know they're dank because we're using a reference from 2015. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing. So we've got some more, even more late breaking news to talk about here with Sam Fahmy and Alex Stanek. And Alex, some news coming out from a meeting between MLS league officials and the Independent Supporters Council regarding a little thing called the Iron Front flag. It's been a point of a bit of a consternation between the supporters and the league in the past few weeks and months.
Yeah. So if you're not already aware, there have been a lot of people who have been flying this banner that's got these three diagonal downward arrows in different supporters groups around the country. It's basically an anti-fascist symbol. A lot of people have been flying it as a way to basically say, hey, you know, we don't support fascism in this section. And MLS basically said, well, that's a political statement, and we don't allow political statements in any section. And so even though we kind of sort of agree with you, we will toss you out and threaten to have you arrested if you bring that design into our stadiums. And a lot of groups got very upset about it, including groups here in Columbus. And all of the groups kind of banded together and said, hey, you know, we're going to keep protesting this by bringing the banners in anyway and making this a big deal and making the league look bad until they reconsider this. And so the independent supporters groups had a meeting with MLS last week, I believe last week, maybe the week before. It was kind of like a preliminary meeting. And they said that they were going to meet again last week. And after that meeting, they announced that, and they kind of did their announcement today, that the ban on that Iron Front symbol will be lifted through the end of the season, and that they are going to work with representatives who are experts on what, you know, what does politics mean? What does what are human rights symbols and which symbols are political in nature? And try to, you know, flesh out the language in the fan code of conduct, which right now just says nothing political can be allowed. Well, that's very much
but we're
going to
have flyovers, national anthems, and military nights.
Yeah.
And jerseys.
Yeah. So it's been a kind of a sore spot for MLS fans for a number of weeks, but that seems to be coming to an end now. They've basically capitulated to the pressure that supporters have put them under, especially fans in Portland, fans in Seattle had really been kind of tightening the screws. Atlanta as well, to a degree. But it seems like that's they're not gonna go back to that. But where they end up in the end, it's going to be interesting to see.
But this isn't just the case of, you know, the supporters, you know, for the heavy hand of supporters coming down on the league, who's trying to make, you know, MLS soccer a safe space where you can, you know, just forget about everything, all the distractions of the real world. These are the supporters and the exact people that MLS has been aggressively marketing and courting for years, advertising this league as the alternative to the NFL or, you know, Major League Baseball or hockey. This is the one that's about the counterculture that we want, young, diverse, hip, urban supporters groups. And then suddenly, you know, when you get those fans in there and then they say, hey, you've got kids in brown and black and brown kids in cages on the southern border and everything else that's going on, and we're not supportive of this, MLS comes in and says, actually, that's political speech, and if we were to allow that, well, then we'd have to allow Nazi swastikas or something, so we just have to not let the Iron Front flag be in there.
Yeah, and I think that soccer is a little bit different than a lot of sports. And I get that people in the United States like their politics and their sports separated at least to a degree. It's escapism for people. I think that a lot of people at least think that they do.
I think people want their politics and sports separated when it doesn't agree with their point of view.
Yeah, there's a lot of that too. But in the point I'm trying to make
Colin
is,
Kaepernick.
Yeah, the second part of the point is that in the rest of the world, politics and soccer are very, very much linked, and you have some teams that espouse certain beliefs and other teams that espouse other beliefs, and they all kind of represent the communities that they come from, and that fans not being allowed to express themselves in that way really goes against the very nature of what a supporters group is, where you are kind of collectively expressing yourself however you choose to do so. And if your supporters group chooses to say, hey, refugees welcome, which you see a lot in Germany and things like that, or if you see
in Columbus,
You know, how wherever it is, you know, that you know, fans want to be allowed to do that, and so I think the league, this is an example of the league moving closer to what the fans have been saying that they want for a long time. It sometimes takes this league a long time to hear what people are shouting at them. But hopefully this is a step in the right direction towards them really taking that feedback, that constructive feedback, and running with it. Right now this is still fairly preliminary, so we'll have to see if they follow through at the end of the season with a reasonable fan code of conduct that allows fans to express themselves as long as it's not hateful.
Yeah, well, we will, you know, give credit to MLS for eventually making the right call after they got, you know, basically were ashamed by everyone online and elsewhere for about a month and a half. But they made the right decision, and that should be commended.
In typical MLS fashion, they tried every wrong decision humanly possible, and when they all blew up in their face, they finally said, okay, we'll try it your way, since every plan that we can possibly think of with all of our bright minds in this room have failed miserably. We will now try your plan. Oh, look, it's working. That's really strange.
It's odd. I almost feel like that's analogous to something else we were talking about a little bit earlier, but can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah.
So we'll probably move on because we do have an actual game to talk about here. Final game. Season finale, or home finale, rather, for Columbus. Still two more games after this one. Taking on the surprising Philadelphia Union. You know, a team who's kind of fell behind a little bit. It was at near the top of the Eastern Conference table for most of the season. Now dropped down to three. Most recently, a 2-0 loss at the hands of the Red Bulls. But still, a team that has overperformed expectations, and is going to be a tough matchup for Columbus. And you know, looking at this game, last game of the season, last game for Caleb Porter and these lads in front of the home fans. What are your expectations? Also, you know, there's a lot going on outside of it. It's Hispanic Heritage Night, a lot of other, you know, fun programming aspects going on. But the game itself, this matchup, what should we expect from Columbus Crew?
So I think what's going to happen is we're going to start off really strong, and it's going to look like we're going to win, and then we're going to lose. I think that's what's going to happen.
And you're the optimistic one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Philadelphia is the weirdest team this season for me because I still have not really accepted that they're good.
Right? It's hard.
Yeah. I think my problem is I can never accept that Philadelphia is good no matter what. Like, they could sign Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo tomorrow, and I'd still be like, oh, that'll get them fourth. That'll get them fourth place in the East. They're just a weird team. And, yeah, I can't take them seriously. But they have a lot of players who can hit you when you're not really expecting it. And I feel like our team is just not very good at those kind of spontaneous, oh, crap, we screwed up. How are we going to get out of this moment where everybody just loses their mind?
Well, no, that's how every goal is scored at the death against Crew.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, God bless Eloy Room because he's the only
Seriously.
Player who's just like doesn't make dumb calls.
That's who Jacob should have called.
Yeah, yeah. And just been like, dude, I am so sorry that you have to play with this, you know, brainless defense sometimes. But in all seriousness, I don't care what happens. I'm just going to go there, enjoy myself. See off this horrible, awful season, and then look forward to 2020, which will surely be better, right? It's got to be. It's got to be.
If they keep making the changes like they are, like at how some of the changes have paid off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they might not be like top of the East or whatever, but I think they have a chance of making, at minimum, being like middle of the pack and making the playoffs.
I mean, they better be. With the investment that we're putting into this team and everything and... You know, Porter's going to hopefully have some decisions he's going to make, and hopefully he's going to make right calls. But, you know, the thing that's weird about this team for me is I feel like we are still underperforming significantly where we should be. And I'm not really sure how you fix that because I feel like on paper, our team should be much, much better than what we've seen on the pitch. And so I don't know if you have to get rid of talent and bring in talent that's more your style of talent, but... I feel like it's almost a psychological problem with this team right now. It's not even a talent problem.
But I mean, it's kind of like when a player like breaks an ankle or tears a knee or whatever. You know, when you're rehabbing and trying to get back to playing, you have this like tentativeness and you're not taking your strongest step. You're not striking your strongest cut. And that's very possible that's what's happening with this team. They're afraid because of how many of their brethren have fallen to injuries. They're afraid to go all out because they might get hurt and then be out for the rest of the season. And then they feel responsible because, like, if I get hurt now, there's nobody to back me up.
Yeah. No, and that's you know, the point. Like, it's, you know, you're talking about this team on paper, and we didn't see the best team on paper, you know, except for maybe, you know, the first few weeks of March and into April. Then, in the course, I mean, you haven't had Milton Valenzuela at all season. Yeah. Federico Higuain goes down early. You miss Jossie Zardes. Zach Steffen obviously losing, but Jossie Zardes as well as Will Trapp gone for Gold Cup. You know, look at all the guys who've been removed out of the picture. And I think it's, you know, it's been good because a point that we've made a couple of times on this, you're able to find out, and Caleb's really been able to identify, you know, who's a player here, who's a guy that is going to be on this team in 2020, and who's, you know, the excess baggage.
Yeah.
And there have been some guys that it's been nice to see really, I think, maybe, you know, secure a spot for themselves. You know, guys that I thought coming into the season were gone. Pedro, obviously, I've always been the biggest Pedro Santos fan. But looking at other, you know, looking at the Connor Maloney's, exactly. And then Luis Argudo, even this, you know, coming into the season, I know that, you know, that he really had a place in a Caleb Porter team as opposed to a Greg Berhalter where he's got to. But now I see him almost as the heir apparent to Hector Jimenez, you know, that Swiss Army knife that you can put in there. So it's going to be interesting to see with this team next year, just by virtue of having people healthy, what they could do. But we also know that that's the thing in soccer that everyone's got to deal with, and you can't just blame, oh, so-and-so got injured on you underperforming. And yeah. I think I give Caleb the sort of this year as a wash. He didn't get in early. You know, the whole front. I give pretty much everyone associated with this franchise a wash on this season because of the circumstances. But next year, final year in Mapfre Stadium, you know, with a full off season for everyone, front office side as well as player personnel. I think it's going to be. This is really, really a put up year for a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that bugs me is I feel like even on paper, when you factor in all the injuries, I still think this team should be better. Like, I look at a guy like Guzman, who I don't know. Had a good game all season.
Yeah.
And then he still, like, ends up in the starting 11 sometimes, and you're like, dude, what is going on? Like, this is the best guy? Like, this is the best guy? You know, and so I don't know. I hope that with the off season, Porter's going to figure out what the scoop is, and maybe guys like Guzman are going to be better if you bring in other people to put around him, but I don't know, man. This is I'm just putting blind faith in Porter at this point still, and that makes me nervous that we're a full season in and I haven't seen what I want to see from him yet. So, you know, I didn't feel this way after Berhalter's first year. I didn't feel this way after Varzia's first year, honestly.
But I think the expectation from Caleb is different because I think most people expected him to do, because the team did so well under Berhalter, and he kind of plays a similar style, that he would come in and do well immediately. Yeah. And what we discovered is maybe he doesn't actually play the same style as Berhalter does. And maybe the players that Berhalter had and how he was able to communicate with them are not... he's not able to communicate with them in the same manner. So for the fact that he didn't add anybody really to the roster until the second window, the middle window, yeah, it is. This year was probably going to be a wash anyway.
But I feel like if you can't win with the squad that you have in the system that you want to play, then you should change the system, at least in the short term. And I haven't seen him kind of reinventing the wheel with this team the entire season. It seems like a lot of these losses, including the one last night, is just kind of chopped up to, oh, we were unlucky. Like, we had a last minute, you know, brain fart, and, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. We'll get them next time kind of attitude, where I feel like this team has real systemic problems still.
I don't know. I felt like that was 2016, though, under Greg Berhalter.
It was, but I still felt after the Berhalter season that, like, okay, the team's getting better. We had that really rough start, and... you know, we turned it around, and we had that last little bit of a rush there towards the end of the season. We've had some of that, but I don't know. These last-minute losses, especially towards the end of the season, are just killing me. So we'll wait and see. I never felt like firing Berhalter was the right call. I didn't even see people, like, really calling for it big that first season. You saw it when we had that winless streak. I don't remember what that was 2 years ago. You saw people saying Berhalter out then, but there are a lot of people on Twitter who want Caleb Porter gone, which is, you know, I'm not there yet, but yeah, it's certainly still kind of troubling for me, but who cares? Like you said, the season's a wash. We'll just see what happens with Philly and then, you know, let Porter bring in his own guys in the off season, and the next season he needs to produce.
And I think, I mean, you look at it, this was a crew team last year that that really struggled to. I mean, they last year. Remember how long was it that they just had gone without conceding a goal? They, I mean, what, we had like three games in a row. This was a team that was playing out of its mind defensively in the first half. And they, you know, went on to then, you know, throughout the rest of the year, there's a little bit of a course correction, regressing to the mean. And I mean, I'm just looking kind of at goal scoring from the crew, and, you know, thinking of that over reliance that we've seen this year on Giassi, Zardes, and Pedro Santos. But guess what? It was the exact same scenario last year, but with Federico Higuain subbing in there. There's only, I think, three players that scored more than three goals, and it was, you know, Josh Williams, I think, with three, and then Federico Higuain and Giassi Zardes, very, very reliant on a couple players. So I think one of the other things is that crew fans have a little bit of collective trauma from the fact that, hey, Caleb Porter was, you know, it's not just that that Greg Berhalter is gone, and that there are very few MLS coaches in MLS that get to trade up, that get to leave on their terms to go to a better option, and that Greg Berhalter did that. But Caleb Porter is the guy that outfoxed him. He is the guy that beat us at Mapfre Stadium to win MLS Cup, and the expectation that, you know, this guy, if Greg Berhalter was this good, this is the guy that beat him. So he's going to be even better. And it has not been the case for a lot of the reasons that we've outlined here. But the thing that I always go back to whenever you hear any of the sack Berhalter, sack Caleb Porter, who is the better alternative that you have available right now? You're not. There's not a coach on the market right now that you're saying that, oh, this guy is going to be a better, that is realistic for Columbus in MLS than Caleb Porter.
We have to keep Caleb Porter until Caleb Porter gets fired, or until Greg Berhalter gets fired from the national
team. And then bring him back.
And then bring back Greg Berhalter. And then Caleb Porter can go to the national team. That's the plan,
didn't,
guys.
Did Caleb Porter have a national team stint?
No.
Why was I thinking that he did?
He, like, toured with the team or something like that. Yeah, and, like, some of sort of a, where he was on his, like, international tour of visiting all these teams. He spent time with the national team.
Yeah, he was on his year hiatus.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be interesting.
We've drifted off course.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
so are we doing game predictions?
That is exactly what we're doing. We're,
my God,
doing it right here in a moment after I'm going to quick give a plug to our sponsors and let you guys think a little bit about what's going to happen. We got this big Philadelphia game coming up. Our sponsors, obviously, our incredible friends at 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development and their team of passionate design, planning, and construction professionals are dedicated to seeing projects from initial design concept through final completion. Have a property design and or development need? Build something together with 180 Property Development. You can learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com, and we thank them for being a sponsor of the Massive Report throughout the season. So we got and then also, I believe, do we want to plug? We've got some tickets that the folks are going to. So make sure that you're following the Massive Report on social media to look out for that trivia question, so you can get some free tickets for here, the home finale. Come hang out with us and cheer the crew on to a glorious victory. I'm sorry, that might be a spoiler alert, against the Philadelphia Union on Sunday. So, fellas, we do need to get those picks in, though. We're going to lead it off with Alex. What you got?
I think we're going to go up 1-0 early on in the game, and then I think Philadelphia is going to put three past us, and we're going to lose 3-1.
Boo.
Sunshine
Sam.
Brigade went cloudy. Good
Dude,
grief.
I don't care. That's the thing. The season no longer matters to me. I am just going to have fun with my friends and sing Glory to Columbus at the top of my lungs until I lose my voice.
Mm-hmm. I will say this. I think Columbus goes up 2, and then Philadelphia pressures back, gets one passed. The defense bends but not breaks, and they come out with a 2-1 win.
Ooh.
Can I change my prediction?
No.
I don't think about this.
No.
I'm going to say 2-2.
No.
2-2.
No.
That's the best I can
do. No, nope, nope, nope. Sorry, Alex. Nope, nope. Yeah, all right, you're done.
3-1 it is.
I think that that Columbus Crew is going to go down early in the first half, and then be able to tie it up. So 1-1 game. Then in about the 89th minute, Philadelphia. Oh wait, no, this isn't working with the math. I wanted to find a way that we would give up a goal. So sorry, Columbus Crew is going to Philadelphia is going to tie it up in the 89th minute. So Columbus Crew up early in the first half. Philadelphia ties it in the 89th, and then Crew scores at the death win 2-1.
No changing, no changing.
Yeah, no, okay, like then we'll win 3-2. That's what's going to happen. Harrison Offel will score the game-winning goal. It's going to be like the one he scored against NYC in the playoffs, just walking everybody. Yep, that's what we're going to do. Thank everybody here for listening in on Alex, Sam, it was a pleasure. It's been a while, and I'm glad that we're all here together to talk about a wonderful thing, and also the Crew playing, but, you know, mostly this awesome new stadium that we're going to be able to enjoy for years and years to come. It's a pleasure, gentlemen.
There will be lots of wins, no matter what happens against Philadelphia in the rest of the season. There will be plenty of wins in that beautiful, beautiful 2021 stadium. Get your season tickets now for 2020. Get priority seating. Sign up now. Final season in Moffray Stadium. You got to be there.
That's right. And get your tickets. You can get a couple tickets again for this Sunday if you just follow the Master Report on social media and answer the trivia questions. Make sure you do that. Gentlemen, it is a pleasure. For Alex, for Sam, this is Bart, my buddies.